You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 355 of Locked On Raptors for Friday, June 29th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode. And of course, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams. We got Locked On Fantasy with Josh Lloyd, breaking down the fantasy angle of all the free agency moves that are about to happen. Locked On NBA is daily across the whole week with a gaggle of different hosts covering little different perspectives across the week. And you can find every show on the Locked On Network on the Locked On NBA iTunes channel. It is a very useful tool if you want to get all the content in your ears from what's going on around the league. It's great, so make sure you're checking it out. If you find a show or a host that you dig, subscribe to their show separately on their own feed. You can do that with Locked On Raptors. We are on our own feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, I think, as well now, too. All over the place. So please subscribe, rate, and review. It's very helpful. It's very nice. Makes me feel good. And moves us up the rankings. So thanks in advance for taking the very minimal amount of time that it takes to leave a rating or a review. So on today's show, nothing has happened yet as of now for the Raptors. LeBron James has opted out of his contract. Maybe he's going to the Lakers. We'll talk about the implications of that in 3 weeks when he makes his decision or whenever. But because the Raptors are still kind of in a holding pattern, there's no trade for Norman Powell or anything like that. They extended qualifying offers to dudes who we expected them to extend qualifying offers to. Because of all of that, we are going to do a not at all news-based podcast with our pal Dan Grant, who loves to go back in the sad history of this sad organization. Dan, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, thank you. I do enjoy, as I said to you earlier, wallowing in some crapulence.
It's pretty good. So today's show, instead of, like I said, talking about news, we're going to maybe reflect on times that this team has kind of moved beyond. It's nice. The Raptors are good now. They have not been a disaster for 5 or so years. That is nice, and hopefully that continues. Don't blow it up. Stay team, run it back until the sun burns out. And you know, the Raptors, of course, have had some very dark times. We've done the trivia tournament that is usually laced with sadness and terrible names and instances in team history. And I thought it might be fun to try to go back and rank the 5 worst seasons in Raptors history to sort of provide some perspective, I think, for Raptors fans who are feeling a little bit down about this offseason, which will probably not contain very much action. So, Dan, are you ready to join me in this pit of despair?
I was born for this.
All right. So a little background on how we compiled this ranking very shrewdly before the podcast. We each had our own top 5 rankings, and we sort of compiled them together, gave point numbers to where we had things ranked. And so we have 5 that are standing alone as the top 5 worst seasons in Raptors history. But there are 3 honorable mentions that we should probably get to that ended up on one or both of our lists at some point, but did not have enough points to make the top 5. Let's start with 2012-13. Dan, I'll throw this to you because you had this on your list. I did not have this on my list. This is the season, of course, I believe the 2nd or 3rd Dwayne Casey season, if I'm not mistaken. Let me pull up the franchise index here.
2012-13?
Yeah, this was Dwayne Casey's second season. They finished 34-48. They traded for Rudy Gay around the deadline, I guess, a little bit before the deadline. And that, you know, obviously set up a lot of good things to eventually come, but it was not a good year. They finished worse in the division, and, you know, Amir Johnson led the team in win shares. So, I love Amir Johnson. Love Amir Johnson. That's not a good sign. Why did you have this season on your list of top 5 worst seasons in Raptors history?
I think because it was just so bleak. It was, I'm going to mention another season later, but it was, you know, they hadn't been good in some time. Bosch had been gone for a couple years at this point. Casey had come in, and there had been questions about whether or not he was a good head coach because of how things went for him in Minnesota. Him and Lowry didn't seem to like each other very much. Lowry was still fat Lowry and was getting hurt all the time. Bargnani was still on the roster, incredibly, in 2012-13, and was really had been, you know, it was just a reminder of what a bust he was every time you looked at his past eating face. Landry Fields was on the team. It was also a bust. Linus Kleiza was in the middle of some stupid 4-year contract we gave him. It was just ugly. Valanciunas was his first year when he came over, and he was like very obviously a lot more of a project than people thought. They kind of made him out to be. He was supposed to be NBA ready, and he was pretty good in his rookie season. But still, he was not. He was pretty clearly not like a game-changing superstar, which people had kind of said that he might have been. Mm-hmm. Calderon got traded away, and it just seemed like there was never going to be anything good happening again in Raptors history.
Yeah, it's fair.
It just seemed like they were destined to be brutal. And I was, for myself, I was living overseas too, and I wasn't following it as much as I probably normally would. I was following it online, but not watching as many games just because of the time difference. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of like, do I love this team anymore? It was like the, for me, it was like my lowest point of my fandom. So it was definitely something that made my list for sure.
That's interesting because this season, honestly, for me, and yes, it's a very bad season and a very bad team. Michael Petras started 16 games for this team. Landry Fields, this was the Landry Fields first season, I believe, after the whole Steve Nash weird diversion. I don't know what the hell it was supposed to be. He started 22 Embargo. Games. Yeah, it was unbelievable, that whole sequence of the thing. Dominic McGuire started 9 games for this team. This was a bad team. Obviously, the Rudy Gay trade happens, and after that, like, this is the weird thing about this season, is I, kind of like you, I was in my fourth year of school, I guess, at this point, or third year of school, and in the first couple years, I kind of drifted away from the Raptors. I was a big fan coming like out of high school, but then I went to school in Ottawa where no one gives a damn about basketball. None of my friends cared about basketball, and I just kind of like drifted more towards like watching hockey for some reason, just because everyone else did, and you try to fit in and stuff, I guess. So I didn't really watch that much basketball. And then the Rudy Gay trade happened, and my dumb idiot mind at that time was like, Rudy Gay, hey, like I know that guy. I wanted them to take him over Bargnani in 2006. Hell yeah, I'm all in on this. One of his first games was a game against the Pacers where they ended up beating the Pacers, and that was a really good Pacers team. I think they went to the conference finals that year. That was the year they took him to seven, I think, the Heat to seven in the conference finals. And it was really cool. And, like Rudy Gay had a big part in that game, even though I think he was like 12 of 30. He ended up hitting some big shots late. So I was like, all right, I'm back in on the Raptors experience. Yeah. What's that?
Sorry, I remember that game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm back. I'm like back in totally on the experience and like totally not really caring about the fit or anything like that. I think I started listening to like basketball podcasts around then, and I was like, why is everyone slagging Rudy Gay? I like him. He's good. that was dumb, of course, and the trade inevitably happened the next year. But for me, 2012-13 is always going to be the year where I kind of got roped back in after a couple years of not really giving a shit. So I couldn't put that on my list, but I totally understand you putting it there because it wasn't good. Bargnani only played 35 games, obviously, because he got hurt all the time. It was terrible. Shot 40% from the field during that season. He's just a bad basketball player. So, yeah, I couldn't put that there for me, but I also totally get it for you. The season on the list that I had that you did not have was 2008-09. You didn't have this one, right?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so this is the Jermaine O'Neal season. This was the year coming into the year where it felt all like, all right, the Raptors have made the playoffs 2 years in a row. It's great. It's fun. They're kind of turning things around. They make this big move for Jermaine O'Neal in the summer. They hype it up as the next David Robinson and Tim Duncan, him and Chris Bosh. And it was exciting. I bought in totally because Jermaine O'Neal was a really damn good player for a long time for the Pacers, and I was all in on it. And then it happened, and it didn't work, and then he was traded for Sean Marion and some stuff, and the end of the season was just like a sad, wallowing disaster. So that's why it's on my list. Do you have any recollections of 08-09?
Yeah, I remember. I was actually in New York City when they made the trade at the draft. Okay. It was the only time I've ever been to New York City. But I was watching it in a hotel room, I remember, with my brother and my mom. And it was, I remember being pumped up for it, but also he'd been hurt quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I was just like, if he's willing to play center and go down low and let Bosch play kind of the outside, it'd be like, this will be great. And then it was like very immediately apparent that they were the exact same player. And it just wasn't going to work. And so, yeah, I do remember things like from that. I do remember being really disappointed. And then also, like you mentioned, the clown show that was shown Sean Marion when he showed up and just obviously had no interest in being there. He came out and had, ran and had a couple dunks, but was very obviously not playing lockdown defense like he would for the Mavericks a couple of years later. He obviously had a lot left in the tank. I think people thought he was washed, but he, just didn't really want to play for the Raptors. So that is definitely a good one. That kind of eluded my gaze as I was going through. I mean, I just blocked it out for self-preservation purposes. But no, definitely I remember being disappointed. So that's definitely a valid one.
Yeah, this was the season, of course, that Andrea Bargnani started at small forward a bunch because they had Jermaine O'Neal and Chris Bosh. There were some like nice parts of this season too. Pops Mensah-Bonsu had a little run; he played 20 games. Jamario Moon, I think this was his first season of kind of jumping on the scene a little bit as an unexpected dude who had 1,700 nicknames. That was cool. but, like, the bottom of this roster, there are some, like, names on the bottom of this roster. So the top 10 guys, it's fine. Like, the regular rotation guys, cool. After that, Will Solomon played 39 games, started 9 at point guard for the Raptors this year. Patrick O'Brien played 13 games, started 3. Quincy Dubey played 7. Roko Ukić played 72. Chris Humphries played 29. Marcus Banks played 6 games, I believe, in one of his 3 seasons with the Raptors, playing 6 or so games. Jake Voskal started a game, played 38 games. Hassan Adams played 12 games, and Nathan Jawai played 6. Just a very depressing back end of the roster that has been fodder for many a trivia question.
Yes, well, I've heard Jake Voskal is just like a big piece of crap.
Yeah, I heard he was just like a giant asshole. Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
The kind of guy that if you looked at his face, you could probably tell he's an asshole, no?
Yeah.
Like, Jake Voskal, like, I don't know.
He's a big, white, plotting...
Yeah, just, like...
Yeah, not a fan.
I'm not certain. Not certain he hasn't purchased a tiki torch before. Let's just put it that way.
Fair enough.
All right, and then so the other honorable mention, the season that we both had, was 2014-15. We both had a fifth on our list that only ended up getting 2 points in our weird aggregation system, but I think it deserves being touched on a little bit. This is a season, the only season that we have, in which the Raptors made the playoffs. They, of course, were 24-7 to start the season. Kyle Lowry was playing out of his damn mind. And then DeMar DeRozan got hurt in late November, the same day that the Blue Jays traded for Josh Donaldson. I remember that so vividly. Getting the notification, kind of like in succession, that Josh Donaldson had been traded for and that DeMar DeRozan had like torn his groin. And that was a weird night, a very strange night. And then, of course, that was the Lou Williams season where it started off really fun. He saved the Raptors' asses in that game against the Cavs, their only win in Cleveland in the last like 3 decades or whatever it is. And it was just a cool season, at the start at least. You know, it was kind of unexpected. The bench was incredible. Grievous Vasquez was doing stuff. And then as the season went on, Kyle Lowry was carrying a load that was unsustainable. He broke down. They kind of stumbled into the playoffs, stumbled from the number one seed or in contention for it down to the 4 seed where they got the Wizards and then got their asses swept by the Wizards. That kind of lays out the case for why it's on the list. Do you have anything else that sort of sticks in your mind from that season?
No, I mean, yeah, for me, it kind of made us question everything that was good the year before. Obviously, Lowry was hurt. DeRozan actually, if you look at his numbers from the series against the Wizards, they didn't look great because he wasn't shooting very well.
Yeah.
But I remember vividly that he averaged like 7 rebounds and 6 assists a game. Like, he was trying to do everything and had no help.
Yeah.
And you kind of saw the glimpse where you were like, this guy is like laying it all out there and maybe he's just not good enough.
Yeah.
And it was like the most disappointed I've ever been as a Raptors fan, because I was like, this team is good. They went undefeated against the Wizards in the regular season. And you could still see it coming because they were not playing well down the stretch. And Lowry was banged up, and you were like, this could go badly. And then it went so badly. It was like, just like, what are we doing here? You know, we got so lucky with that trade, the unexpected trade the year before. We had the heartbreaker against the Nets, and then maybe this is the end of this run. And people thought Casey was going to get fired, and I just remember it just being like a disaster.
Yeah.
And it was, just super disappointing.
That year was also the high watermark of the high watermark of that season for me, like melancholy wise, was Game 2 against the Wizards, because kind of everything everything that I hated about that series kind of culminated in that game, because A, Paul Pierce like played the 4 and did stuff. The whole like James Johnson faction that was exhausting that season, because like, he was fine in a few games, but like ultimately there was a reason he didn't play, because he was inconsistent and not particularly good. And like the standing ovation he got when he came in the game and proceeded to give up 2 threes to Paul Pierce in the corner was just like, I'm sitting there just stewing and my blood is boiling. Yeah. And also having to watch Lou Williams take shots from the logo at the end of every single quarter the entire season. He was given his sixth man of the year award at that game before it started. And again, me just sitting there stewing like, this isn't deserved. It's stupid. It's bullshit. I don't want to watch Lou Williams praised for the season he just had that I had to sit through. I was like probably more anti-Lou than a lot of people, but I couldn't stand it. So
no, I couldn't say anything.
Yeah, I think it was one of the first blogs I wrote was about Lou Williams' stupid end-of-clock bullshit.
I remember vividly people being like, "Why does Dwayne, well, if it doesn't work, why does Casey keep calling for it?" I'm like, there's no effing way Dwayne Casey is calling that play.
No.
He's calling a play, and then Lou Williams is ignoring the call and just going and doing whatever the fuck he wants. Yeah. And because he hits once every five times,
they
people let him do it, I guess. I don't know what the deal is with that, why people wouldn't just call him out. But, I mean, that's what they do on better teams. You can see that when people, you know, kind of freestyle like that. But they just, I guess they did thought it was their best option, but it definitely wasn't. And it was really, really frustrating to watch.
No, the game, I think it was against the Pistons. They had a chance to win it at the buzzer. And they, I don't know, they had like 8 or 9 seconds probably. I think it was 14 seconds now that I think about it.
I remember.
Yeah. Lou gets vividly the ball. Yeah. They don't advance it. They just come up from their own end. Lou decides not to pass or do anything of the sort, try to get a shot closer. I think they only needed 1 point as well.
Yep.
They needed a two to win it, and Lou decides to take a shot with his foot on the Detroit Pistons logo, right in between the 3-point line and the half point and the halfway line, and obviously it misses. And that was just like the whole Lou experience summed up into one. Like, yes, I think he shot like 22% on those shots. Yet everyone was like, "Oh man, it's so great when he hits them." Like, yeah, like once every five games he'll hit them. It's
This can't be your go-to end of game offense.
No, no. The one saving grace of that season was the Bruno game against the Bucks early on. That was fun. Other than that, it was a pretty like that was the season that included like DeMar missing the dunk in MSG late in the season as they lost that game against the Knicks. It was rough. Yeah. It was a rough end of the year. So that's an honorable mention as well. Now moving on to our top five worst seasons in Raptors history. Number one here, 2010-11. This I didn't actually have this on my list. You had it third, I believe. So this is
number five, right?
Yes, this is the this is number five. Okay, my bad. Okay. Yeah, the number one on our list. We're going from five to one. So yeah, the number five worst season in Raptors franchise history, 2010-11. Of course, this is the first post Chris Bosh season. I'm surprised. Like, I tried to put this on my list. There's just way too many other, you know, bits of anguish, sort of, you know, punching it out, but. This was a really bad season. 22-60 in 2010-11. Amir Johnson once again leads the team in win shares with 5.6. Jay Triano coaches the team. They're just a horrendously bad defensive team, obviously. And nothing went well. This was a season in which only the Cavs, I think, were sadder around the NBA. What do you remember about this season as you sort of look back?
Yeah, it was, you know, a lot of similar things to what we mentioned earlier when we talked about 08-09, but just for me, it was just even worse.
Yeah.
It was, you know, Bosch leaving brought back the whole Vince left and Stoudemire left and Camby left and no one's going to stay here and Canada is blah, 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 second-class citizen and we'll never keep a star. And Colangelo, if, you know, if Bosch didn't tell him he was going to stay, Colangelo should have traded him, which I actually agree with. And he just didn't trade him, so he didn't get any. They wound up getting something for him because they then assisted him in going to just so that he could get more money.
Yeah,
which was, I don't know. I wish there was a little more FU there, but I guess that's not how you can do business in the NBA. But it was Triano's second full season. He had taken over for and Mitchell halfway through a couple years earlier, and the team was just really bad, and they were not getting better, and they had lost their best player, and they just seemed like they had no plan. They seemed completely out to lunch, completely lost. All the shine of, you know, Colangelo's first couple of seasons when they won the division and everything were just completely gone. And they didn't really have it. I mean, DeRozan was still really raw. They hadn't picked Valanciunas yet. They were just bad. And there was like no relief in sight. You were just kind of like, and again, you mentioned earlier the record 22-60. Like, that's, I don't even know if there was a team in the NBA this season that had a record that bad. They were just atrocious. And it was not even fun to watch. So It was just a really, really garbage season.
I went to, I believe, the home opener or the second home game of the year against the Cavs, and it was the weirdest experience ever because both teams are horrible, and both teams have just lost their best player. I'm sitting. I think I came home from school to go to this game. This might have been the last straw for me. I remember I went with my brother who didn't give a shit, like did not care at all. We had amazing seats. We were like I don't know. You could probably see us on the broadcast. We were sitting that close, like near the baskets on one end. It was amazing. There were amazing seats, and I just sat there. The arena was dead quiet and just somber and just bummed out. Like, there was no buzz. There was no excitement. And, yeah, that kind of carried through the entire season. This was the year that Reggie Evans averaged 11.5 boards a game, got hurt early on, and that was one of the best individual performances of the season was Reggie Evans getting lots of rebounds for a little while at the start of the year. Leandro Barbosa was the third leading scorer on this team.
He was the crunch time guy.
Yeah, he was the third leading scorer.
Before Lou Will.
Yeah, better than Lou Will.
He's definitely better, yeah.
Yeah. Linus Klaza, this was like the big free agent signing that was going to like paper over the loss of Chris Bosh. He played 39 games, started 23, didn't play particularly well. DeMar DeRozan shot 9.6% from three this season.
Yeah, I think he only had like 11 attempts and he made one. I think there's some weird stat like that.
He attempted 40 something, 0.6 attempts a game. So.
Okay, so way down there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Not great. This was the Young Guns year as well, where they tried to say, hey, Sonny Weems, DeMar, and Amir Johnson, it's fine. They're going to be here for you. That didn't work out.
Yeah.
Just a really, really dark and just... They really seemed like there was no hope because you had lost all hope in Brian Colangelo. The whole thing where he would like find the loopholes and like find guys from Europe to come over and play, those seemed to be gone. You know, this was a year where Joey Dorsey played and started 9 games, played 43. Julian Wright was on this team. This was just, I should have had this on my list, I think.
Yeah, it's a bad one.
It
was
good.
One of those ones I was looking at the list of like their record by season. That's kind of how I did it when I went through. And I was like, wow, that looks like an especially bad record. I don't really remember that season exactly. And then I went and looked and I was just like, oh yeah. Yeah. Oh God! And there's actually, you know, that season is when I just first started dating my wife, and she was not a big basketball fan, but she didn't have any like strong feelings about it. But she does hate hockey; she does not care for it, does not want to watch it. So she was like, "Well, if you want to watch sports, I'll watch basketball with you." And I was like, "Okay." So that was the team we watched, and she was just like, "Why do you like this? This is terrible. These guys are really bad." And
why
is
am
it
I
always like this?
Why am I dating an emo guy? What's going on here?
Why are you so sad all the time?
Yeah. My God.
So, very, very, very difficult season.
Yeah, no, this was a season that I definitely sort of started to check out. I mean, Andrea Bargnani played 66 games, so good on him for that. He averaged 21.4 points a game. Good on him for that, I guess. He was probably not as bad a player as we make him out to be, but he was terrible.
He was hurt all the time.
It was that, and he was just like damaging to be on the floor, even if he was like an okay scorer. He was just damaging, and the fact that they doubled down and invested in him beyond his rookie deal was also extremely damaging.
Yeah.
Like he might be the most damaging first overall pick ever. Like Anthony Bennett was worse, Michael Olowokandi was worse, but Bargnani set the franchise back further than any number one pick in NBA history. I think probably.
It's fair. I think for him to be on the team for so long and to be as bad as he was,
yeah,
and for him to just once in a while show you like a 10-game stretch where you're like, oh, he could be this.
Yeah, and then he would pull a hammy and be out for 6 months.
Yeah, 40 games with a fucking hangnail.
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark. Yeah, so that season, I think that is a noble number five. Number four, 2004-2005. You didn't have this on your list, did you?
It's an honorable mention for me because I had talked about it. 03 and 04 and 04 and 05 in my mind had like blended into one dirty cesspool. I left it off just because I think the bad stuff that happened in 03 and 04 kind of created 04, 05. But I think this is going to be for me exactly what would just happen to you, which is after we go through it, you're going to be like, this should be on your list.
Yeah, 04, 05 is really bad. This is, of course, the season that starts off. I mean, first of all, it was the second straight 33 and 49 season, which to go 33 and 49 in back-to-back years, I can't think of anything more bleak than that. You got Vince starting the season off saying he's not going to dunk anymore. This was Hoffa's rookie season, so that pick really proved to be garbage immediately. I think Andre Iguodala won Rookie of the Year, if I'm not mistaken. Am I wrong with that? Yeah.
No, I believe that's right.
Yeah, so there's that. You got Sam Mitchell going 0-0-0 in direct response to Jerome Moiso and Pop So being really bad at basketball. And then, of course, Vince Carter gets dealt for Aaron and Eric Williams, Alonzo Mourning, who didn't show up. I think two first-round picks or one first-round pick that became like Joey Graham.
It was two. One was Joey Graham, and one was what was the other one? I can't remember.
Did they trade one?
Pardon me?
They might have traded one. Yeah.
One might have been the pick that was Roy Hibbert.
Oh, maybe for
O'Neal, maybe.
Maybe. Either way, not the best.
Not good.
Yeah, so this season, and then, yeah, the whole Vince thing, the trade that happens with him, and, like, this, I believe before Vince got dealt, there were a bunch of games where Sam Mitchell was like, you know what, I'm not going to close games with Jalen Rose and Vince Carter, my two best players. I'm going to close with, like, Milt Palacio and Lauren Woods and Lamon Murray, and that was,
Yeah, for sure. It was ugly. It was definitely a lot of was the Kobe 81 point game that season?
No, that was 05-06, which is like an oddly endearing season, even though it was terrible. You had like Donyell Marshall having a big year. You had like Mike James had, like, that was one of the kookiest seasons I think in Raptors history. It wasn't quite as depressing because, like, I think you kind of see, like, Chris Bosh kind of came into his own a little bit, and there was a little bit of optimism. But it was also just a bizarre ass season. Whereas 04-05 was just straight up just anguish for the entire time and just not really having any sort of... I remember finding out about the Vince Carter trade. I was watching Global News with my family. I don't know. I'm like 12. We're watching the news. And back when you did that at 6 o'clock. And the sports section comes up. And I believe it was Jim Taddy, Burlington Sports Hall of Famer Jim Taddy, a legend and a mustached hero. I believe that he came up with a sports thing. Was like, all right, here's this trade. The Raptors are trading Vince Carter as it was breaking. And I just felt deflated. I had invested so much in Vince Carter as a youth from, you know, like age 7 through age whatever the hell, 12 or 13. And to just have that happen and kind of ripped away from you in exchange for literally nothing. I mean, Eric and Aaron Williams did not do anything. Eric Williams was like a fine player, I guess, in his time, but was not good for the Raptors.
No.
Aaron Williams barely did anything. He averaged 1.6 points. Yeah, the A-train, God. And this was the season that ended with, like, Omar Cook like maybe an option. Like, he had a nice couple of final games, and like I attached to that. Like, that was the depths to which this season went. Was, hey, maybe Omar Cook's something to be happy about. It's bad.
Yeah, I think for me the reason I left it off is just because that had all been brewing even the year before.
Yeah.
And when it happened, it was finally like, well, this sucks. And I was really furious. Like, I was someone who had a Vince Carter jersey and threw it in the garbage and, like, had up his poster above my bed and, like, took it down. And, like, I'm a little older than you. So I was, when they drafted Vince, I was 13. And so, like, at this point, I was about just 19, 20. I was in second year university. It was, like, very much like in the peak of you have free time to watch sports. And I was furious, but also Sam Mitchell, I kind of liked Sam Mitchell at the time because I was naive and was like, you know, they've gone in the right direction and this will be better.
In fairness, anything that wasn't Kevin O'Neal, who we'll get to, was an improvement.
Yes, we certainly will. Oh, so anyway, I did a quick look there. That second, for they did get a second first rounder in the trade, and they traded it with Jalen Rose to the Knicks to get Antonio Davis back. And it wound up being Ronaldo Bachman.
That's the most mid-2000s NBA shit I've ever heard.
Yeah. They basically used that first rounder to get rid of Jalen Rose's massive contract.
Oh, God. Okay, so that season, I think we both agree, is bad, although you didn't have it on your list. That's fine. It's number four. Number three... There was a tie. I didn't really know how to break the tie, so there's a tie. Number three, 2009-10. This is, of course, the last season of the Chris Bosh era. The team goes 40-42. Bosh misses the last, you know, I think 15 or so games of the season. Kind of not really outwardly saying it, but kind of essentially just like gearing up for free agency and not really... and if committing to anything, it's committing to not coming back at all next season. This was the season, of course, after this was Jay Triano's first full season in charge after replacing Sam Mitchell during the Jermaine O'Neal season, and this was also the Hedo Turkoglu season. That also went terribly. this one was like an end of a, like, you could say it was an end of an era, and it was, I guess, but it was the end of such a, like, meager era that it's so sad in hindsight to think back that we were like upset that that era was ending, but like it mattered, and this was one of Bosch's best seasons, and it went to waste because like the next best players in the team were Andrea Bargnani and Jarrett Jack.
Like, he was spectacular. Like, he was so fun to watch those like 4 years there, kind of sort of more post Vince when they were making the playoffs, and then that last year they didn't make it, but he was the whole team. And it was him every night, and he would, you know, he got huge and had the crazy long hair, and like he was just that I remember that fondly because of him. But yeah, definitely him leaving.
Yeah,
definitely a sour note for sure.
Yeah, the Hedo stuff.
Yeah, Hedo. Oh,
take me through your Hedo roller coaster.
We got him, and I was super happy because he reneged on his agreement with Portland to come here because his wife was excited about the Turkish community. And I was like, oh, this is great. And like, we had just seen him be a key piece on a finals team.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, this guy can handle the ball. It'll be kind of cool. We got Bosch. You know, we'll get some shooting off the ball. It's going to be kind of a fun thing. And then he got here and was just terrible. Just like out of just one of the guys you never want to give money to. Like completely out of shape. You know, wanted to do the same kind of freestyling stuff that he did in Orlando, but it didn't totally work because Bosch wasn't as physically dominant as Dwight. So I think Dwight, as much of a dickhead as he is, kind of was such a force of nature back then that he kind of let Hedo, kind of covered up a lot of Hedo's issues.
Yeah.
You know, if you threw it anywhere near the rim, Dwight was going to dunk it. So he probably got some empty calorie stats that he probably wouldn't have gotten with a lot of other players.
Right.
And maybe made him look a little bit better than he was. But they also played that very modern kind of four-out thing Orlando and Stan Van Gundy had them doing. And it was just, you know, they didn't really think about that. There wasn't as much thought about fit. They were like, this is a good player. We need to get a good player. And he was just really bad. And then, yeah, when that thing happened when he did the, you know, ball, and it was just like, okay, this guy's a prick. Like, we need to get rid of this dude.
Yeah.
And they did shortly after. But yeah, again, one of those things where you're like, oh, sweet, we got a great player. Maybe Bosch will stay. And then it was like, oh, this is a disaster. He's 100% going to leave. And, yeah, definitely a big – not even a roller coaster, because on a roller coaster, you come back up. It's more like a water slide.
Yeah, this was the year that they gave 43 starts to Jarrett Jack because he was friends with Chris Bosch from Georgia Tech and thought that would keep him.
College roommates.
The prelude to signing or keeping Grievous Vasquez around as a way to lure Kevin Durant. Some great strategy going on in the Raptors front office. Although I guess the last one was more of a Masai thing, or maybe it wasn't really a thing at all. I don't know, but. Yeah, just the Hedo thing, the fact that he was in pizza commercials where he was like actively ignoring Jay Triano's advice to like watch film and stay healthy as he like chugged Sprite and housed pizza. No acting required even a little bit for that.
And, no, you're just filming his house.
Yeah, it's just like it's like in-house like closed circuit TV cameras that they just ripped the tapes from.
Yeah, he didn't even know he was being filmed. Living his life.
Yeah, the fact that those exist like as like a relic that you can go back to on YouTube to just sort of sum up everything that happened with the Hedo experience. Yeah, it was rough. And then yeah, like what was your like sort of take on Bosch sitting out the end of the season? Were you like resentful of that at the time, or are you still resentful of that?
So I'm of two minds. I remember at the time, I really loved Bosch, and I still do, and I defend him. And, I mean, at the time, he did get hurt. Like, he was really hurt.
Yeah.
But I remember they were close to making the playoffs, so people were like, can you come back? Should he come back? Should he play hurt? But, like, you look at the NBA, and look at the way it is, and you look at, like, what someone like Danny Ainge does to Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
And, you know, if this guy's going into his biggest possible free agent deal, potentially, you know, it's first unrestricted free agency, it's hard to blame him.
Yeah.
It's, you know, kind of callous. But, again, what was their best case scenario? If he comes back, plays really well, they make the playoffs, and they get housed in the first round again.
Yeah. By the Magic again, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. So, no, I don't blame him. At the time, it was frustrating, but I also... So I was such a Bosch fan that I was like, oh, no, he must really be hurt if he's not playing. And I still do believe that. Like, I think he was genuinely injured. And maybe by the time – maybe he could have come back for the last, you know, five or six games or whatever. I mean, it was just, like, such an outside chance that why risk it?
Yeah, he was so good. I think he's kind of forgotten almost because of the success Kyle and DeMar have had, or at least relative success to the rest of the franchise's history, and because of the Vince thing. Like, Bosch is kind of forgotten, but he was so good for, like, a lot of years there, and I don't really think you can pin their lack of success or making the playoffs really on him, because as we've discussed on many of these seasons we've gone through, he was surrounded by dog shit. Like, just horrendous teams.
Look at their draft record.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in those 5 years. They never had, they didn't have one other, like, even half decent player that they picked.
Who was like, who were like the second and third best players that Chris Bosh played with as a Raptor? Like, Jose Calderon's probably number two.
Yeah. Who's number Parker.
Parker, TJ Ford.
Yeah, and guys who were hurt like all the time. Parker played a lot. But again, role players. They're all role players. They, he never had another, like a 1B, which is, I guess, what they tried to do with Turgaloo, and they tried to do it with Jermaine O'Neal, and it just didn't work out. But, you know, you think you would have a, hopefully have a front office that has the foresight to find someone who can play with one of the, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer. It shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, Donyell and Jalen, I guess you could throw in that, but that was before Bosch really became Bosch.
Yeah, he was super young, because he was 19 and, like, such a, he was like a pipe cleaner when he got drafted. He was tiny. And then that was also in the, you know, Vince morass kind of hanging over his first couple years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Good times. Good times. All right, next up. The number two worst season in Raptors history also was tied with the last one, but again, I'll give tied to the old person. 1997-98. I did not have this on my list. You had this number one?
First.
All right, give me your case for the season that happened when I was 5 years old.
Okay, well, I was 13, so I was in grade 8. Okay. So let me set the scene for you. The first couple of years in Raptors history, you know, 95-96, 96-97, there was just huge excitement. They didn't need to be good. They, the purple jerseys, Damon Stoudemire was painted on a building downtown. He averaged 20 points a game as a rookie. Like, they got better. And they also won more games as a, in a, for the first year than people expected. And they got better in the second season when they, Brendan Malone had left. They had brought Darryl Walker in. And they had drafted Camby, who was immediately like an impact player. He was the second overall pick in the draft. And they looked like they were going to be good faster than people thought. And then after that second season, so this is going into 97-98, which is my pick for the worst year, Stoudemire, out of nowhere, kind of, well, out of nowhere for me, I was 12, requests a trade. And you're like, what is going on? Like, this is our best player. They trade him for Kenny Anderson.
who didn't show up. He was Alonzo Mourning before Alonzo Mourning.
Yeah, refuses to report. They flip him to the Celtics 5 days later, along with Popeye Jones, who I loved, so it was, like, doubly insulting, and Zan Tabak, who was terrible but was, like, a member of the original Raptors team. They get flipped to the Celtics for a package centered around rookie guard Chauncey Billups, so that's kind of cool, who then leaves the Raptors in free agency. he stays for 30 games and he's gone. So this is all happening around this time. Camby, who is in his second season, leads the NBA in blocks that season, 3.7 blocks per game. He's just like a force of nature, but is already making noise that he doesn't want to be there anymore. And he's not going to resign. So they then trade him to the Knicks for Oakley, which is great, except that Oakley was already old. And at the time, we didn't have Vince yet, so it wasn't like, oh, this guy could make sense as, like, a, you know, enforcer for Vince kind of thing. It was just like, what are we doing? Like, is that the best we could do for Marcus Camby, who was the second overall pick, like, 2 years earlier? So for Stoudemire and Camby, the seventh and second overall picks, respectively, I wrote this down so I wouldn't forget. They wind up with, here are the players they wind up with. Alvin Williams, who was great and started for the team forever, but a role player. Charles Oakley, Gary Trent, 30 games. With Chauncey Billups and a couple of draft picks, both of the draft picks were later dealt away, and they didn't even use them.
Gary Trent played like eight games too.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, that's my point. That was the third best player they got for those two guys. So they start the season 11-38. Darryl Walker, who had been kind of the toast of the town as a young kind of up and coming coach in the year before, gets fired. They bring in Butch Carter, and the team goes 5-28 to finish the year.
No. Darryl Walker resigned after the Damon trade.
Excuse me, you're right. Yeah. Sorry, not fired.
He's like, this is dumb. I'm out of here.
that's correct. I misremembered that. But yeah, no, you're totally right. They bring in Butch Carter. He goes 5-28.
Yeah.
The team finishes 16-66. They have no good players. They have just nobody. Like, they're just like, and it was after the first 2 years had been the upward swing. It was like, what is going on here? Is this team going to move? Like, people thought the team was going to leave.
Yeah.
And that was a real thing, because there was already been the buzz around the Grizzlies, and they didn't. So it was just kind of like a real downturn. It was like, maybe, you know, this is kind of a joke. Maybe this was a fad. it won't stick around. I also, I don't know if you remember this, this was right around the same time. The CFL randomly expanded to the United States for a year, and there was like a bunch of American CFL teams, and one of them won the Grey Cup, and then they all folded after 1 year. They were like, that was dumb, and they just got rid of them all. So teams were in flux. The leagues were weird. And it was definitely like a possibility that the Raptors weren't even going to exist anymore. So for me, that was a hugely low point. And then, of course, that next offseason is when they got Vince and moved to the Air Canada Centre and kind of started the more modern era of Raptors history. But it was definitely a humongous low point. And for me, in grade 7, grade 8, it was like, wow, I've been going to basketball camp and stuff. Like, I really fell in love with it. And I was just like, this is, what is going on? Is this just going to all go away? And it was really bad.
Do you know which CFL team won the Grey Cup that you speak of?
I believe it was Baltimore, but I can't remember their...
It was the Baltimore Stallions, quarterbacked by Anthony Calvillo, I believe.
There you go.
And they became the Montreal Alouettes.
So, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff, CFL. That's so weird. There was like a team in Shreveport, Louisiana.
There was.
In Las Vegas? Yeah. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. It was 90s. Crazy.
Sure.
And then they came out with the Our Balls Are Bigger logo. It's like, all right, guys. They were basically just trying to be the XFL before the XFL.
Yeah. One silver lining to the 97-98 season, of course, is that it led to Vince Carter being drafted. That's good.
The night is always darkest before the dawn, Sean.
Yep. And then that also ended poorly. So yeah, that's a good call. Speaking of Vince Carter and that experience ending poorly, one of the precursors to that was our number one season on this list of worst seasons in Raptors history. It is the 2003-2004 season, helmed by Kevin O'Neal. The Raptors went 33-49, missed the playoffs for the second straight year, and were coached by Kevin O'Neal, who was an idiot and really bad at his job, and I don't really know how he got the job. What are your where did you have this on yours? This was number two or three for you?
I had it second, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I had it three, I think. And
so cumulatively,
it's number one, and I think that's probably fair because it was horrendous. Give me your reasoning for why you had it ranked so high on your list.
It's funny because I wrote a bunch of stuff out for the other ones, and this one I just have like a very short list. It just says, team can't score, O'Neal destroys lamp. Final full Vince season, Rob Babcock.
Babcock.
Yeah, those are the things that I wrote, and that's it. And I was like, those are, for anyone who's listening to this podcast at this point, they're going to know all the connotations of those things. But yeah, definitely, like, they were coming off, you know, Lenny Wilkins, who it was unclear if he was actually alive by the end of his tenure. And they replaced him with this guy, Kevin O'Neal, that if anyone has listened to your wonderful Glenn Grunwald interview, he talks about why he picked Kevin O'Neal as the coach and that he was going to be kind of, you know, a more of a disciplinarian culture kind of a guy. And that it was clear after, like, not very long that he was pretty unhinged.
Yeah.
And just came in and was super intense and had no idea how to coach offense. He had Vince Carter on his team and he couldn't score. Like, it was very, very weird. But yeah, I mean, O'Neal breaking the lamp. It's so funny because, like, coach smashing a lamp in a hotel room, unless he, like, ripped it apart with his bare hands or, like, hit his assistant with it or something, that's not that big of a deal to me. Yeah. But the fact that other people on the team were, like, gloriously leaking it out, being like, look how crazy this guy is. He broke a lamp. Please get him away from us. And it was just mentioned over and over. Like, I found this Wicked Globe and Mail article from 04 where they talk about, it says, has O'Neal's alleged behavior come to the board level? The answer is yes. Something happened before the end of the year. Maybe. There are very serious concerns about O'Neal's behavior. And they ask him about it, and he goes, I believe I've done as good a job as I can do, and don't regret one thing I've done in any way. It's like, okay, Kevin. God.
Yeah.
Read the room.
Yeah. So that coaching search, as you outlined. Sorry, go ahead. I thought you were done.
No, I'm done.
Okay. So that coaching search, as you outlined, involved Kevin O'Neal, Dwayne Casey, Sam Mitchell, and Mike Woodson, I believe, or Mike Brown, one of those two. Of course, they went with Kevin O'Neal, which was the bad decision, as Glenn Grunwald acknowledged in the interview he did with me.
He did.
Also, he, a little nugget in there, if people haven't heard this, I've told this on the podcast before, if you haven't heard this, Grunwald detailed to me that at the start of that season, about a month in, the NBA league office called him to ask why the team couldn't score any points.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. So, okay, I'm looking at the game log right now.
Yeah.
How many times do you think the Raptors scored more than 100 points in this season?
Once.
No, that's too low.
Never?
No. They scored more than 100 points in this season 13 times. 13 times in an 82-game season, they scored over 100 points. They averaged 85.4 points per game, which is insane. They only reached over 110 three times, one of which was an overtime game in which they scored 121. They reached... Yeah, it was bad. Okay, let's go to the bottom end of this thing. How many times did the Raptors score less than 70 points?
Oh, my God. Five.
No, eight. Wait, oh, one, two, three, God. Four, five. Yeah, eight times they scored less than 70 points. In one game against the Minnesota Timberwolves on November 1st, 2003, start of the year, they scored 56 points.
Oh.
They lost 73-56.
Yeah, that's just rough. That's hard to do.
They scored under 80 points about three times as many times as they scored 100 points.
Yeah.
Just a clusterfuck of a team.
Like, that's a team that it's a team, too, that had good NBA players who could score points on the roster.
Yeah.
Like, Vince
averaged 22, Vince 5, and 5 that year.
Yeah. It's just crazy. It was just, I don't know, man. Like, just such a train wreck. And, like, it was, too, it was kind of like what we were talking about before, like the post-Bosch playoff years where there had been such excitement with Vince, you know, the second round shot that he missed, and then they lost against the Pistons in the first round next year when, Chris Childs forgot the time on the clock. And then it was just like, okay, this is kind of slipping away here. And then they hire Kevin O'Neill, and it's just like, wow, this really went from 0 to 60, like, very quickly.
The
team used to be good.
It took them 10 games to score 100 points for the first time, and that was a double O to overtime game in the 10th game of the year. And then they didn't score again over 100 points until the 18th game of the season. Just... comically ridiculous offensive numbers that just like they seem foreign. And like 56 points, the Raptors like may have like scored less than 56 points in like a quarter of their first half this season.
Yeah.
73-56 is a score that I'm pretty sure the Raptors were up by at halftime against the Cavs at one point this year.
Yeah.
Like,
I remember O'Neal was like lauded as this like defensive specialist, and so his whole thing was, we're gonna play slow and use the whole shot clock and get good shot. Like, so that sounds fine. And then you're watching it and you're like, this is so awful.
This is college basketball. He was a college coach through and through.
Yeah. It was disgusting. And it's very deserving to be the worst season on this list because it led, as we mentioned before, it led to everything that happened in 04-05. It's, you know, it's totally set the table for the Vince trade. It's Rob Babcock getting his like dirty little fingers and everything and just ruining.
It's Grunwald getting fired and Jack McCloskey taking over?
Yes.
Yeah.
Trivia. That's a good little piece of trivia.
Yeah. They finished top 10 in defense, though, so there's that.
I bet he puts that on his resume.
Oh, my
God. Top 10 defensive team in the NBA.
Top 10 defense with who the – I don't even – where's the roster? I lost the page. I don't want to know who's on the team. It's bad.
Alvin Williams, who's a good defender.
Yeah. They traded for Donyell in the middle of the season. Yeah, they traded for Donyell.
Jalen Rose.
There are so many players on this roster.
Yeah, it'd be an incredible amount. They traded for... Did they get Lonnie Baxter in that trade, too?
They did get Lonnie Baxter. Yeah, he's on this list. 23 players were on the roster this year.
Wow. Robert Archibald?
Robert Archibald's there. Michael Bradley. Mungi Batir. Rick Brunson, Corey Blount, Jerome Moiso, Michael Curry, Gennaro Pargo, Chris Jeffries, which I thought Pargo was only allowed to play for the Hornets, but I guess not. Gennaro Pargo, Chris Jeffries, Roger Mason, Lonnie Baxter, Milt Palacio, Deion Glover, Rod Strickland, Jerome
Neon
Williams, Jerome Williams, Lamon Murray, Morris Peterson, Antonio Davis, Alvin Williams, Chris Bosh, Donyell Marshall, Jalen Rose, Vince Carter. Guess how many players on this team played more than 50 games?
Hmm. let me think. Vince was hurt that year, so I don't think he did. So I would say 4.
5 is the correct answer. Vince did play. Oh. Vince led the team in games played that season with 73.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the year before was the one.
Yeah, the year before was the one where they made the run.
Without him. Yeah.
Yeah. Shitty the year before. It was the year before that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Because they drafted Bosch because they were awful the year before. So it was Carter, right. Marshall, Bosch, Alvin, and Jalen Rose that all played 50 games. The next highest games played total on the team after Jalen's 50 was Morris Peterson. I'm looking at the game started. Never mind. I'm an idiot. It was 8 players who played more than 50. I was looking at starts. Disregard that entire.
You can edit that out.
It's fine. Whatever. This season inspires hyperbole because it sucked ass. This podcast did not suck ass. I think we have extensively covered why it's very okay for the Raptors to be where they are right now. If anything, I hope this eases people's minds going into the offseason. You could be this team. You could have Gennaro Pargo and Monke Batir and Robert Archibald and Mil Palacio starting 13 games for you. They do not have that. They're very good. They are exciting. They are disappointing in the playoffs, maybe. But, hey, maybe LeBron goes west and things are different next season. Who knows? Maybe the Celtics trade for Kawhi and Kawhi sits out the whole season because he didn't want to go to Boston. Who knows? Things can happen. Either way, the Raptors are in a good spot. They were not in a good spot during many of these seasons. Dan, you were in a good spot because you were on this podcast for over an hour, almost an hour, wherever we're at.
Yeah.
Anything you would like to plug right now?
No, I'll probably be doing some stuff for Raptors HQ, and that's pretty much it. Busy summer, having a kid, we bought a house.
Yep.
So it's a busy time. Last day of school was yesterday, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yep.
Nothing coming down the pipe for me right now.
Good stuff. I'll probably have a podcast on Sunday during free agency stuff, if anything's breaking, with Vivek Jacob. Also, I'm going on vacation next week, so Vivek is going to take over midweek for a couple of weeks, hosting the podcast in my stead. It'll be much better, so look forward to that. And
I am looking forward to my matchup in the trivia tournament, whenever that comes up.
Yeah, I gotta figure out when to do the other matchups. People are on vacation and stuff. It might wait till mid-July, but hey.
Okay.
I would expect nothing less from this tournament at this point.
Included in 2020.
Yeah. It won't be that long. Maybe 2019. We'll see. But definitely before the end of the summer, I'll say that. We don't know. The World Cup's going on. There's only so many biggest tournament in the world's people can deal with. So maybe we'll wait to steal the World Cup's thunder. We'll let the World Cup have its moment, and then we'll come back in and sort of be the reason that you're not missing the World Cup because you have the trivia tournament to deal with, I guess. I don't know.
Fair. That was good.
Yeah, good talking myself in circles. That's going to do it. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all that stuff. It's very helpful. Thank you very much. I know there might have been some questions about the podcast because of the fan rag news this week. We're all good. The site's going to continue on. LockedOnRaptors.com is my site, and I have the rights to that shit, so nothing to be worried about there. Podcast is still going on as planned, as always. And stay tuned for more interesting stuff from the network in the future. And also, be good to each other. There's lots of shitty things going on in the world right now. Be good to each other. Don't be an asshole. Try to be compassionate and empathetic to people. And that's all I have to say. We'll be back again on Sunday with another episode of Locked On Raptors.